Coming up on All About Android, it's me, Flo, and Ron. We talk about how India just banned a ton of Chinese apps. Google nearby is, well, near. Also, OnePlus Nord is near, too. Although the Pixel 4a, we are finding out, might actually not be near. But anyways, you know what's far from near and maybe actually far away? It's Ron and Flo and their subscription to YouTube TV, which they don't like anymore because the price just increased. Plus, we have a bunch of your email, including the email of the week, coming up next on All About Android. All About Android is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Learn the ins and outs of IT careers and get the most up-to-date training with IT Pro TV. Visit itpro.tv/allaboutandroid for an additional 30% off all consumer subscriptions for the lifetime of your active subscription. And use code AAA30 at checkout. Hello, welcome to All About Android, episode 479, recorded on Tuesday, June 30th, 2020, your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Florence Ion.
You think after 9 years I wouldn't take a drink right before I introduced myself, but you caught me.
You were thirsty.
Stay hydrated. Got to stay hydrated for the intro. It'll run you dry if you're not careful. That's one
welcome
thing
back, like. Jason. Did you have a
thank
good trip?
Thank you.
Welcome
back.
We missed you.
I had a good trip. I'll just go ahead and give you just a real quick blurb of my week. We went camping into into the mountains a couple hours away from Petaluma. Our friends own acres and acres of land. They were like, hey, there's no one up here. Just go camping. Have fun. And we have another friend who had a trailer. He was like, sure, borrow our trailer. It was my first time driving a trailer and pulling it behind our Sequoia. Little did we know that the roads were super narrow and totally like all dirt roads. And I ended up running the trailer off the side of the road. The road literally collapsed under the weight of the trailer.
Oh, my
gosh. Everybody was okay. And actually, at the end of the day, like net result is I wasn't out a penny. We were able to get it out of the place that it fell. We were able to fix a few things that were wrong with it. And all smiles. So I have a ton of stories from it. That was my
gosh. See, that doesn't happen here in New York City often.
Well, that never happens to me except for last week. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, but you had a nice time camping. It was nice.
It was a blast. Like it was such a memorable trip, even though like tons of stuff went wrong. But when we finally got there and we opened the door, I was like, 3 hours getting this trailer out of from off the side of the road. I'm gonna open a beer. And I open up the door to go into the trailer. The refrigerator door had swung open and all the food was everywhere. It literally could have been a movie, basically, is what I
was just going to say. It's like it's almost comedic in that regard, right? Like it's like a sitcom.
Even more so, the night before, my daughter had made us a chocolate cream pie. We ate half of it. The other half was in the fridge. What do you guess made the most mess? It was all over the curtains, chocolate cream pie everywhere. So anyways, I had a good week. How about you?
We should pause for a moment for the chocolate cream pie.
For
a moment
yes.
of silence.
Yeah, I agree.
I love chocolate cream pie. It was so difficult to see it smeared on the ground with a bunch of cashews and broken glass. But
we didn't have any chocolate cream pie, but we had the second episode of the new All About Android, and it was a blast. We missed you, but I thought Flo did a great job running the show.
You did a great job too, Ron. And so then our guest, David Ruddock from Android Police, he was great as well.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's right.
But excited for the three of us to dive into the stuff today.
And we got a lot of stuff to dive into, so why don't we do that with the help of Burke at the Twit Studio. It's time for some news, Burke.
I think we should ban camping. Here's Android News.
No. That's not at all what I was saying. No.
I like the concept of Burke coming in with really controversial opinions during the Android News intro that have nothing to do with Android.
I just think it's interesting Burke came up with that opinion because, Burke, you originate from the area where there is ample camping in Northern California.
Look, yeah. It's not up for discussion.
Okay. Look, he's got a thing against camping, it sounds like.
Apparently.
So, no comments.
Just don't go there. You might set Burke off. And that's one thing that I know about Burke. You don't want to set him off. It's ugly. All right. So topping the news this week, this actually happened just yesterday. The Indian government banned 59 apps developed by Chinese companies just yesterday. Many Chinese firms consider India to be their biggest markets right next door. The impact of this move is huge for Chinese developers. India has the world's second largest internet market. Half of its 1.3 billion population is online. So, and you know, we've heard Google talking about the importance of moving, you know, of having their presence in India and China and you know, places like that. There's just so many people there using the internet. It's a place that you want to be. Banned apps include TikTok, which that's a big move, Club Factory, and UC Browser. Those three together have more than 500 million monthly active users in May alone. So that gives you a sense of kind of the size of the user base of some of these apps. TikTok in itself had more than 200 million monthly active users in India alone. That's gone. So imagine you make an app and 200 million of your users are suddenly out the door. That's got, you know, panic sets in. Also, ES File Explorer, Clean Master, we've talked about them and how they probably shouldn't be in some of these marketplaces. MeToo, WeChat, Weibo, Cam Scanner, essentially all the Cheetah Mobile apps, I'm assuming. For now, apparently the apps are still findable in the Play Store in these areas. Google has yet to comment, as far as I could tell, unless they've come out with one a little bit later today, but I haven't seen it yet. So I don't know what Google's plan is on proceeding forward with this. But what do you guys think? This is a pretty big deal.
I mean, this is crazy. You know who it's really good for? It's Facebook. Right? Yeah. Because everyone who's using WeChat and what, you know, they're on WhatsApp, you know, like this is going to be a huge boon for WhatsApp. But I mean, the numbers are so astronomical that it's hard to fathom and it's hard to think about what impact it has to their business. I will say that, as someone who works in social media as my day job and all that sort of stuff, like, TikTok and these other apps are problematic because you don't quite know what's going on there, right? Mm-hmm. And it's hard to ignore the mass number of users there, but it's a big question mark as to what's doing, you know, what products coming out of China and what their true motivations are and what's under the hood of those apps. So, I mean, I think this is a very extreme defensive move to make, to ban them for an entire country, and especially a country with such a huge footprint. But, you know, I'm curious what India's motivation is on doing this, you know, in terms of what their suspicions, what their concern is, or is it a way to promote innovation within their borders?
Sounds like it's kind of a lot of that. But Flo, it sounds like you have something. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I know that there is a lot of how can I word this carefully? I agree with Ron that I would like to know, like, what it is that India found in these particular apps to have them banned. But I can't help but feel, from just like a top down kind of taking a quick look at it, that this is just a very this is a move out of nationalism and maybe not so much a move out of security, but that also could just be me being very cynical.
But if it's a move out of nationalism, why stop at China? Is US next?
Because of some deeper things that I don't want to get into, because I feel like that's like a whole international relations course. but I would imagine that India would. I would imagine if this were a political theory class of some sort, that the professor would say something akin to, India values maybe a relationship with other markets, maybe more than China. I don't know. Again, this is all conjecture. I'm speaking from just like, but I don't know. I guess that's, I feel like it's a little more political than it is for the safety of the general population. But again, I'm speaking as a total outsider with just some and political science classes behind her.
So. And how, and Jason, to your point about they're still in the Google Play Store, so how are they enforcing this?
Yeah, that's also
I mean, that, and that's, I think, remains to be seen, because I don't even know what Apple has done with the App Store as far as removing these. We know, I mean, Google has removed apps at the command of a governments in certain places. So has Apple. So I assume that's going to happen. I don't know why that hasn't happened yet, or at least it hadn't happened by the time some of these articles were written yesterday. Obviously, I'm not in India, so I can't log into the App Store and check it out myself in the Play Store and see whether they've been removed yet or not. But I think Google's able to do that on a, you know, on a location basis. Right. And to get to your point, Flo, there have been some border clashes that have happened earlier this month. Some serious stuff going on there that is totally a sign for the times. We're seeing it, you know, worldwide, but it, in, you know, in this case, happening between the border of India and China. So this isn't just about apps. It's definitely, it definitely feels like it's more broadly politically motivated, and they really are pointing to these apps and saying, you know, in their statement to kind of explain this, that this is about national security, it's about the defense of India, and that they just have received, you know, information that these apps are, you know, not good. There's security of data is on the line, breach of privacy, they say impacting you know, public order issues that are related to this. So it is totally a political move. But a, you know, and like when I really think about it, I'm kind of reminded of the US move to ban Huawei, which kind of feels akin to something similar, where it's kind of like, well, we have the ability to put a stranglehold on this company and by extension the country, because we know how valuable this country or this company is to that country, therefore we can do this, and it's the upper hand that we have. So I feel like that both scenarios are, at least in that way, very similar.
So in the Cousin of Jaw in the chat room shared a link, and Burke, I put it in the doc if you want to pull it up, but NextWeb posted basically confirming that TikTok vanished from both the Apple App Store and Google Play Store in India following the ban. So they, Google did comply with the order. And then it also includes, apparently TikTok India posted an update in regards to it and their kind of response to it. And so, you know, kind of, you know, their kind of defensive response, you know, they say, the government of India has issued an order for the blocking of 59 apps, including TikTok. We've been invited to meet with concerned government stakeholders for an opportunity to respond and submit clarifications. TikTok continues to comply with all data privacy and security requirements under Indian law, has not shared any of our information to our of our users in India with any foreign governments, including the Chinese government. Further, we are requested to the future that we would not do so. We place the impious importance on user privacy and integrity, blah, blah, blah. So whether or not you believe that, right, to you, well, that's what they're saying. Yeah.
That's the critical point there. A lot of people read that and would not believe a word of it, only because it, you know, the China has the government that it has, and it has its hands in, from what people believe anyways, a lot of the operations of these, you know, air quotes, whether, you know, one side or the other, what you believe, but air quotes, independent companies, we just don't really know. And that's the problem. A lot of people take that not knowing to lead to, well, then if you can't, if you don't know, then you can't trust, therefore they are untrustable. And so that's why we're here. So anywho, hopefully that
works.
All right, Ron, you got the next one. Totally not controversial.
Switching gears, when I think of India and TikTok, I immediately think of airdrop-like features. But so we've actually there have been rumors of an upcoming airdrop-like app called Nearby coming to Android sometime. And for those of you who don't know, airdrop is the Apple functionality that works on iOS and Macs to easily wirelessly drop files from one device to another device. Some users are currently testing the beta for this feature right now. Google says it plans to share more info in the future, but it's not unrealistic to assume that this could release with Android 11 if beta testing is underway now. Google plans to launch the feature for Android 6 and up devices, and it would also work with Chrome OS. It's actually already in the Chrome OS Canary builds. So if you're looking for a better, easier way on the at the OS level to transfer files from one device to another, it looks like we're finally getting it. Many years later. So, yay. I'm glad they finally got down the roadmap list. They're like, oh, file transfers. Okay, let's do that.
Yeah, we can do that now. Sure.
story of this is just the little minutiae that are being added to Android and Chrome OS to just kind of like make it into this bigger platform. This is such a, you know, this is such a big company move. That makes sense.
Yeah. Now, meanwhile, you can do this right now if you have Files Go installed. Or Files by Google. Sorry, Files Go was so 2 years ago.
When it wants to work. It's not a good, perfect solution.
But it's there. You just both have to have the app installed. And you both have to go into the app and trigger it. And it's done via Bluetooth and all that. But
you know, Jason, anyway. One thing I learned from my dating life in my youth is that just because someone is there doesn't mean
they're the good option.
You need to use them.
Good advice.
Everyone heed that advice. Very important. Flo, you got the next one.
This is unfortunate news, just to kind of put a damper on your day, which is that if you're not on a Pixel, you might be missing out on some Android 11 features. So when Android 11 launches, three of its big features won't actually make the jump to all devices, according to an XDA exclusive. So they got a hold of the pre-release copy of the compatibility definition document, which tells OEMs what features they must support and what features they should not support. So one
and everywhere
feature,
in between.
I'm sorry?
And everywhere in between. I kind of failed to.
Right. That. And everywhere in between. So device controls, those smart home controls on the power menu, the OEMs are able to disable this feature if they choose. Now you can imagine in this sense that Samsung will definitely do something with this because they have their own sort of Samsung home ecosystem that they've really invested in. And I can imagine that that is something they would just kind of roll with all the way. Conversations and notifications. OEMs can choose whether they will highlight conversations ahead of other types of notifications. So that ability to kind of get alerted to the most important convos you're having with your best friend, your parent, might not be coming through first if your manufacturer decides it's not really a priority. And the last one is identity credential, and that enables the ability for, you know, things like the mobile driver's license. So this was listed as a requirement earlier this year, but it is now not required for OEMs. I would have to research that a little bit, just kind of get into maybe why that would be. But I can imagine it's because it's a security thing, maybe clearance. Yeah. Something of that sort. I don't know. But these are three things you are not guaranteed if you're going to get the Android 11 version on your non-Pixel device. So, thanks to
you. Yeah, I think of the three, I think the last one, you're right. Like, I can kind of see why that might not make the jump. There might be other security implications tied up in that as far as, you know, work that an OEM would actively have to do to support it. Although, if... you know, to be fair, if it's there, I would argue if you're an OEM, you want the latest and greatest features in order to kind of be at least with the game, if not a step ahead of the competition. So that's a feature that I think a lot of people would be very interested in once they understand it, once they actually know that it exists. So that's a bummer, but I kind of understand. The other two, well, I guess I kind of understand device controls too, because that's really... That's really locking an OEM into saying, like, this has to be on your power menu. Like, I can understand why an OEM might not necessarily need or want that there. I just know that I really like that feature.
You just know that OEM was every other OEM that has its own smart home ecosystem out there, because that's what this is. This is Samsung and LG and whatever other company that has their own smart home gadgets. They're saying, we don't want to prioritize your stuff over ours. Which is fair.
I mean, in the free market, that is fair.
True. Yeah. Ron put it well. In the free market, that is fair. Rats.
Nice little caveat, but very true. Very true.
Yeah.
And finally, because we're all using our phones for AR these days, right? Augmented reality.
I mean,
I can't not use my phone for augmented reality. It's like all I do, literally.
There's an alternate universe where we're using AR every day, and it's made our lives better. And sometimes I dream about that alternate universe.
Yeah. Where there's many alternate like universes this. That are opposite of that.
We're all just like, oh, look at that.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's only one alternate universe. And when there's like unlimited numbers of them and that's only one of them, it's not looking too good. Uh-oh, did I reveal too much about it? My feelings on AR right now. AR Core 1.18 is out. It includes the recently announced Depth API. So this was actually, we talked about this before. It was first released as a preview in December. It allows for occlusion, which occlusion is essentially you've got a virtual object that can interact with real objects on the screen. So so it might, you know, a chair that's in your shot, a real chair that's in the shot might block something virtual that sits behind it. It would know that chair is there, and it would do the work to kind of hide it behind it. Another thing that it allows for is for the virtual objects to play off of real objects. So, like an example there, maybe you're taking a shot of a real staircase, and you drop a virtual ball at the top, and it bounces down the real staircase. That sort of thing. Cool stuff. Ron Amadio at Ars Technica points out there's no mention of whether moving objects like people would block virtual objects. All of the examples that are shown are fixed real world objects. So, you know, maybe there's improvement to be made, or maybe they just haven't talked about that yet. But definite improvements to AR on our smartphone. But again, it just kind of goes back to like how much are people ARing these days?
Well, it goes back to how much are people ARing these days. And it also goes back to what's the point? Right. Like so like, yes, it's cool that you can bounce a augmented reality ball off an actual staircase, or you can, you know, looks like measure that box, which is pretty cool, or, you know, run virtual dominoes in your house. But AR is still lacking the killer app that actually is in that alternate universe that I mentioned. What is the functionality that I need in order to do that with? Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it could be argued that Pokemon Go was the pinnacle of it, or is the height of it. And that was barely it. All that really was hardly it. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, with the exception of very specialized, you know, measuring or like home improvement kind of construction things, or real estate, or like those sort of things, I'm still not seeing a killer app that uses AR, period. It's just at this point, it's still all experimental. And, oh, neat, look what you can do. Move on. You know, so
neat. You can do that.
Yep.
What next? So I'm trying to remember. Flo, were you the Pokemon Go player of the group here? I know I didn't really play it very much.
No, she was.
I'm a different Pokemon game. I do Pokemon the card game.
So you didn't play Pokemon Go. Well, what I was thinking was to ask like a real Pokemon Go player, if you went into AR mode and the Pokemon or whatever you call them, suddenly like you're trying to throw the ball at the Pokemon and it keeps hiding behind the tree. Would that be cool? Like, would you want that? Like, that kind of sounds neat to me.
Sounds frustrating.
Yes. I mean, that's the challenge.
I don't think this is the real world application for AR. I think these are just, like with everything Google does, this is just a stepping stone for something bigger. I imagine this will have some sort of usefulness like in the vast future that we just can't think about right now. And I think it all has to do with how a computer maps its vision of the world. I think that is more in tune with what this is about, and that what we're sort of like presenting to people with regards to the news, that's just kind of the palatable version of what augmented reality is. We don't have the devices or the application for it yet, but it's going to happen in the future and there is going to be a reason for it. We're just we haven't quite found the money shot besides some really interactive gaming.
Yeah, or measuring, as Burke points out in our chat. A lot of people like the real-time measuring.
I
rarely ever trust that. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I can't trust it for like right down to the centimeter measuring. Like maybe a ballpark. But can I really trust it more than
ballpark.
That?
It's totally ballpark. It's like if you just want an idea of how to place furniture in a room, or you just want an idea of how much could fit into a room, but it shouldn't replace blueprints, so to speak.
Right, yeah. Yes, indeed. Not anytime soon. All right, so let's take a break. Thank the sponsor of this episode of All About Android, and then we'll get into some hardware news. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by IT Pro TV. If you're looking to get into IT, if you're interested in crafting an IT career, Now you know where to start. It's IT Pro TV. They have taken the guesswork out of the entire process. IT Pro TV's learning coaches are going to help you navigate the IT career roadmap that you're looking for. And they'll even assist in finding the perfect career that's right for you. If you don't have an idea of what you're looking for exactly, you can find it through IT Pro TV. Sign up for a premium membership and you can let an expert guide you through. You'll start to set some goals for yourself. Your coach is going to implement an IT training program that's going to allow you to reach them. That's going to help motivate you to reach them. Their extensive IT career paths library can assist you in learning more about different IT careers and even help you pick which one is best for you. From entry-level IT to cybersecurity, you can learn the ins and outs of all those and plus more as a jumping off point, such as what you'll be doing and how much you have the potential to make when you get there. Now, once your training is complete, IT Pro TV takes it a step further and helps assist you in finding the career of your dreams. IT Pro TV has a learning coach for teams even, so you can engage and grow the skill base of your team members through a corporate premium membership. There are over 4,000 hours of IT training that they offer, as well as being the official video training partner for CompTIA, and have 12 CompTIA on-demand courses, including CompTIA A+, Network Plus, and Security Plus certifications. So now is actually the perfect time to maximize the potential of your team and help them get the certifications that they need to become successful. Let IT Pro TV guide you into the IT career that is best for you. Go to itpro.tv/allaboutandroid and use code AAA30 and you'll receive 30% off all consumer subscriptions. That's itpro.tv/allaboutandroid. Make sure and use that code AAA30 and you'll get an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active consumer subscription. IT Pro TV, build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. And we thank them for their support of All About Android. All right, it's time for four hardware things in hardware.
It's very specific.
Four. No more, no less.
It's our new, it's a new it's a new segment in the new All About Android where we do four hardware things. No more, no less. Four.
Four.
Four. That's our magic number. Even though there are three of us, that's four.
Talk about anything outside of those four either. Okay.
We are contractually obligated to only talk about these four. We can't deviate in any regard. So in recent weeks, we've been talking about the rumors that OnePlus was going to be getting a more mid-range affordable device out there. We heard the rumor of a OnePlus Z. Well, turns out OnePlus announced themselves that it's the OnePlus Nord. N-O-R-D, Nord. OnePlus is teasing the upcoming device heavily with an event in India on July 10th where they won't be using TikTok on the device.
I was about to say.
They said the device will launch in Europe and India initially. No confirmation of when or if it will come to the United States. And Pete Lau, co-founder of OnePlus, said the device will be, quote, our first product below $500 in recent years, which is a wonderful thing to say. Sources are also leaking some details that it's going to have a dual 32-megapixel main and an 8-megapixel wide camera on the front. And earlier leaks revealed that it would be running a Snapdragon 765G with 90 hertz AMOLED display. So here we are, OnePlus Nord, an affordable OnePlus phone. I already like the sound of it. This is great. Anything that's sub 500 with the level of quality OnePlus has been putting out lately, I think this is going to be great for the market.
Do you like the sound of Nord?
I don't like the sound of Nord, I will say. And also, I thought at first, because there's other companies with NOR like that are called Nord. Yep. And so I was like, oh, is this related to that? But no, it wasn't. So, yeah. So,
trying to see if there's like
say,
an easy to.
But oh, can sorry, you. Sorry, everyone. It's a Skype. You know how it is. I was going to ask, but can you convince your iPhone using family and friends to give this a try?
It's a good question.
For the
good question now.
For the price tag.
I mean, if it's $500 and the iPhone SE, whatever they are calling it, is less than that, probably going to have a hard time convincing them. Nord. I'm trying to find the definition of Nord. I want to know.
I mean, when you think of a Nord, what do you think? You think of a Viking. You think of, you know, that
Nordic
part of the world.
Nordic. Yeah. What does Nord stand for? So Nord is French. North. Yeah, it means north. There it is. Interesting.
French for north. Okay.
I looked up on Google Nord definition, and in their little, you know, people also ask. The first one is Nord a word?
Is Nord a word?
And the answer is no. Nord is not in the Scrabble dictionary.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's not an English word, but we do know it's French, right. Danish, Icelandic,
Norwegian.
It is Norwegian,
also Romanian. Because yeah. Nord is how you say north in Romanian, which is Latin language.
So 765, Snapdragon 765, which as far as we know, based on early rumors, the next Google Pixel, not the Pixel 4a, which we'll talk about in a second, but the next Google Pixel is said to launch with the 765. I don't know if it's going to be the 765 or the 765G, which is this one. The G, from what I understand, is more of a gaming performance focused version of the 765. Could be getting that wrong, but I'm pretty certain that's what it's all about. So it's interesting that their mid-range is going to eventually kind of go up against Google's premium device, which might be closer to mid-range than premium on the next round of Pixel devices.
I would say it's closer to mid-range, and I heard a rumor that the Google Pixel 4a is going to be called the Google Pixel Nord, so which is going to make it even more confusing.
No, that's confusing. Yeah, don't do that.
Joking. That's all conjecture on my part.
What is south in French?
I'm sud.
The Pixel sud.
The Pixel should.
I'm just I have not been enthused with any of the Pixel news this year. It just feels very much a step in the I don't know which way you're going direction. Like, which part of the street are you crossing? Like, we don't know. You're just in the middle of the street of this giant four-way junction. It's been very confusing. Just the whole, who is the person for the Pixel? Who is it?
Yeah, especially if the 4A is their mid-range and you know, they're kind of the A series is now notable for being Google's mid-range series, because last year's 3A at least made a lot of news as far as being a really great, solid mid-range device. So if the Pixel comes out and it's also a mid-range device, like, what exactly is the difference? Does that relegate the 4A to be a low-end device by comparison, or a low-mid versus high-mid? I think you're the scene that you create of someone standing in the middle of a four-way intersection going kind of like confused as far as where they're going.
Meanwhile,
think it was perfectly appropriate
car,
for the
I'm
Pixel 5.
You to get out of my way because I have places to be, and I'm sorry I didn't take the bus because I don't live in the city. I come in from the suburbs. So
I also heard a rumor that the Pixel 4a is going to be called the Pixel 4a way stop.
Four-way
intersection.
Four-way intersection. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
A little late on the uptake on that one, but that's okay. That's why it's awesome. We will find out more about the Nord in a couple of weeks. It sounds like they're going to have that event, and we will hear all about it then. Flo, we're dancing around the Pixel 4a in the middle of the street. What can you tell us?
Will we find out about a Pixel 4a anytime soon? We actually don't really know, because the rumors keep changing on this one. But we do know that it's at least whatever it is that it requires one step closer to being released, which is it has passed through the FCC just a mere few days ago, just in time for the 4th of July holiday. This is the key step to its release in the U.S. But again, with the rumors going here and there, we don't know if we're thinking of a launch this summer. We don't know if we're thinking of a launch this fall. At this point, this could just be a theoretical phone that exists in the void somewhere, and we're not actually alive. This is actually the movie Sixth Sense, and well, anybody who watched that movie knows how that turned out. I've gone full conspiracy here. This is all I've been doing in my time in quarantine. So everything is conspiracy to me.
Tinfoil hat.
Now I'm just thinking of Bruce Willis. He was in Sixth Sense, right?
He was. So was Haley Joel Osment, who, well,
He's great. Yeah. Haley Joel Osment, he aged into, if you watched him on, he was on Future Man on Hulu. He was fantastic on that.
Yeah.
So
sorry. I'm still just thinking of Bruce Willis and his Bruce Willis look.
Yeah. That thing. The confused. Yeah.
All right. Pixel 4A. Who the heck knows when it's going to come out? We were talking prior to the show that the last rumor I heard was that it was going to come out sometime this summer. But you were saying that you had read a rumor that it might actually be pushed back to the hardware event in October. And if that's the case, that's even more confusing for the Pixel 5, because how do you differentiate two mid-range devices at the same event?
That's why I'm confused. I don't know what's happening with Google's hardware trajectory. I just know that this has been a very difficult year on all of us, not just personally, professionally for some of us. I mean, it's a very difficult year, and I'm seeing that this is coming out. It's coming out at the seams from everywhere. Even like the one thing that you think that you could just throw yourself into as an escape from reality, you can't, because it's also affected by whatever the heck is in the air.
What's in the air? Well, I'll tell you what's in the air for your wearable devices. A new processor. Qualcomm has the new Snapdragon Wear 4100 and 4100 Plus chip.
Too late. I don't want it. I'm not interested. I'm sorry.
Wow.
No,
Jason. I totally took that away from you.
Made Burke end the show. That's how it was.
Yeah, he's like, I'm out of here. It. He just wants to remind you, you're watching on Twitch. Yeah, you're not alone, Flo. A lot of people, have given up on wearables on Android at this point and just been like, look, Apple won. Like, they made the best advanced wearable with the Apple Watch, and it's just, you know, too bad that you can't really use it as well on Android as you can on iOS devices. Well, Qualcomm thinks that a better processor is going to change that, and maybe they're right. I'm not sure I agree, but it does feel a little too late. Yeah, totally, right? So the 3100 launched in 2018, and it was an upgrade for sure, but it had the same CPU as the processor before it. So the upgrades were minimal and very specific. Now, what we're seeing a few years later, the 4100 chip, it shrinks from a 28-nanometer to a 12-nanometer process. So that's actually a really big jump. That's definitely going to improve things. 25% better battery life, faster LPDDR3 memory, support for 16-megapixel cameras. So, like, I'm assuming 16-megapixel cameras on the watch, which, I mean, who's taking pictures with their watch? But maybe I'm getting that wrong. A low-power 4G LTE modem, yes. Right now is a big time for spies, so you might be onto something. Faster tilt-to-wake response. Things are just going to be faster, more improved. They've updated the processor so it can handle more tasks. So, for example, sleep tracking and heart rate tracking on the chip instead of the main CPU. So offloading that'll improve things as well. So it's definitely a bigger step up, but I think your question is very valid. Is this too little, too late? Not only for Qualcomm and the chip itself, but for the watches that this would end up into. Do people care that much about Android smartwatches at this point?
No.
Kind of doesn't feel like it.
I mean, I know Flo has aired her distaste, but I will continue to be devil's advocate on this topic, that what we think of it and the overall market thinks it doesn't matter, because Fossil, with investment from Google and Taghue and all these other companies, want to make smartwatches to compete with Apple. So,
yep, right.
But nobody's wearing them.
But they're selling. But they must be selling in some regard.
They keep trying.
I don't think they are. I'm dubious, because every time, and I do a lot of shopping. Okay, we all know this. And every time I'm going into the tech accessories, I just see all these Android Wear smartwatches, whatever, Wear OS smartwatches, like on super sale. And you go and read the reviews for these things, and they're terrible. Like you were saying, Jason, 25% better battery life. What's 25% of zero? It's still zero, okay?
Ooh,
so battery life is zilch, nothing good. Like that's 25% of nothing good.
All right, so I'm going to chime in, and Burke, I just pasted the link in the docs if you want to share it with our folks who are watching the video, but our audio folks, I'll share. I just did a quick search on smartwatch sales reports, and as of May 2020, USA Today ran an article that says smartwatch markets sales rise despite COVID-19 pandemic. And of course, Apple dominates it. But a research firm from Strategy Analytics says that Apple holds a 55% market share in the smartwatch category, followed by Samsung with about 14%. Garmin rose to the third position with 8% of smartwatch sales. Overall shipments grew 20% over last year, reaching 13.7 million units sold in the first quarter of 2020. Smartwatches are selling well through online retail channels during lockdown, et cetera, et cetera. So while it doesn't specifically call out Wear OS in the photo gallery, the first one is a watch that's prominently says Wear OS by Google. So people are buying smartwatches apparently. So they are selling.
Just not 13 Android million. Ones.
Well, no, I mean 13 million in Q1, and 55% of those are Apple. So what's half of 14? That's 7 million. So six million are not Apple, right? And then another 14% are Samsung, right? Like millions of those are running Wear OS.
No.
Right. Yes.
No.
Yes.
Samsung smartwatches run on Tizen.
No,
oh,
I
you
know,
mean like I'm, millions of the whole pie, but it's,
yes.
That's not compare. But the experience is bad. I'm sorry, I don't agree with those people.
But the experience is bad.
But you're touching on something here, which is that more than half Apple, maybe not quite half of the remaining half, but pretty close is Samsung, and Samsung is not Wear OS. Samsung is Tizen.
You guys don't forget Garmin. Garmin's a really silent player in this, but like a lot of really outdoorsy folk, people who are really adventurous, love their watches because, again, it's the battery life that's on it.
Disappointed.
OS? You know, I'm disappointed with Google as an Android user for so long because I was there with the first Android Wear smartwatches, and as the years went by like just nothing was getting done with that. It just was the same sort of disappointment after another. I apologize. I'm very cynical about it, but I've been burned.
I think I kind of agree with you on this flow, just like breaking down these numbers, because I don't think Garmin's really doing Wear OS, right? Like they're doing their own thing.
No, they're not. Their watch is 7 days battery life, and like you can go mountain biking a couple of times within the week that you have that battery life, and it will track it for you, and it will give you your notifications and all that. Like these are people are figuring out other ways to make this happen, and Android is just really falling behind. And this whole fossil thing, to me, it just looks like it just feels to me like fast fashion. Like that's what Android Wear is going to. It's going to fast fashion instead of, you know, really serving
long-term utility.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
I don't know, man. I still think when you're selling in the millions in some regard, it's not insignificant.
It's true. Yeah.
Good point,
too. And I agree with you on that, but I also go by based on like what I see people wearing. I go by just like what pop culture has, you know, like what it's referring to. I go by, you go to the hospital, every other nurse is wearing either a Fitbit Versa or an Apple Watch. So it's, you know.
I'm not saying that Wear OS is competing at the level of Apple or Samsung or, you know, or Fitbit, but I've said it numerous times. It's just got to be enough. It's enough for these OEMs to give them money for them to keep making it. And apparently,
I agree
it
with you, Ron. They want to find. I think the larger point that you were making was that there are so many smartwatches still selling. So this is a place that Google needs to be with regards to Android, even if what they're doing maybe isn't serving the needs of us all.
I mean, and to be honest, it's not the premier OS or not the premier brand, but there's going to be an affordable watch that someone can buy if they want to get a smartwatch and they can't afford the premium one, and it's going to run Wear OS. Like, that's what happens.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
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 Crazy. Wah-wah, indeed. All right. One last one is, as we mentioned, we would only do four hardware stories. But this is a quick one and it's fun. A user by the name of Ice Universe posted on Twitter what appears to be a leaked render of the Samsung Galaxy Fold 2. So if you're curious what the Samsung Galaxy Fold 2 will look like, if you're watching the video, you can see that. You go look on Twitter at Ice Universe's account. You can see that. And what's notable here is the location of the punch camera, the hole punch, which looks kind of like, you know, it's a third of the way in from the left on the top. It's not centered. It's kind of weird. But if you picture the Fold folded, it actually makes a lot more sense. And that punch hole camera, it would be dead center on the folded version of it. So who knows if this is true or not, but this is a render. And here, if you're watching the video, you can see kind of a little dotted line there that shows where the camera would be on a folded version. But yeah, so Galaxy Fold 2 possibly coming soon.
And Ice Universe on Twitter is a pretty prolific leaker, so you know, very, very trustworthy, and has proven to be trustworthy over the years. So, and has a lot of insight into Samsung releases. So, better than the little long notch thing that was in the first Fold, I think. I don't know. The hole punch doesn't really bother me. I know that it bothers some people. It doesn't really
just,
bug me.
Just very, very, very quick side note. If you go on Instagram and you look at like Kawaii Tech or whatever, like Cute Tech, the Samsung, why did I forget the name? The Galaxy Z Flip?
The Z Flip, yeah.
Yeah, the Z Flip. That's the one that is in all those cute little photos. So it's getting some traction. It's becoming a part of the aesthetic, this folding phone. I'm into it.
It's a thing.
It's a thing.
Sure is.
You know what else is a thing? Many things, in fact. Although this week, only two things. And that's apps. Let's do it. I know you two have feelings. You have thoughts about this.
This one's tough.
We did. We had so many thoughts that Ron and I were already flooding our group chat with, you know, our respective thoughts on this. And the thoughts are about YouTube TV. And so if you're paying attention to any of the streaming news today, you might,
if you got an email from YouTube, like I did.
I was going to say, if you paid attention to your inbox today, you might have gotten an email explaining to you why your price is going up next month. So YouTube TV is getting a price increase from, I believe right now it's $50 all the way to $64.99. It launched at $35 back in 2017. Remember back then when we thought the dream of affordable cable would stay alive? Well, that dream has just been killed, because now that YouTube TV has added those Viacom channels, apparently that's an extra $15 tacked on for you to get access to channels like Nickelodeon, Comedy Central, MTV, BET, VH1, and the others that follow in that family. Google did say this in response to some of the commentary about this price increase. As the streaming industry continues to evolve, we are working to build new flexible models for YouTube TV users so we can continue to provide a robust and innovative experience for everyone in your household without the commitments of traditional TV. Now, some might say this is hinting at TV tiers, which was something that I had told Ron and Jason earlier today that I would love to see from YouTube TV. But I just can't help but stay stuck on the fact that what YouTube TV was supposed to be was a promise of a differentiation from the way that we get cable now. And now it's just become another one of the status quo. And I feel like even though maybe cable has moved off of from set-top boxes and from having to deal with a cable company per se, even if you're paying for it through over the air, it's still being treated like, well, you're paying for access to all of these big companies' content, so we're just going to lump it all in for you. Now it's just
it's no different. Yeah, and Flo, I'm completely with you. The great thing about the reason why I embraced YouTube TV was that I was in San Francisco. I had an over-the-air antenna. But the thing was, I didn't get every channel because I was on the other side of Sutro Hill, right? And so it's direct line of sight, and it's okay, great. I can get the major networks, and I can get the and Burke's showing the graph. I'll get to that in a second, Burke. But you get the major networks plus, you know, I was able. It solved my. I was doing this. hackneyed, because of MLB and baseball, I just wanted to watch the Mets. And because of blackout rules, and when I was back in New York, I actually couldn't watch it using MLB's TV service because of those blackout restrictions at the time. And so I was using this hackney way to get through to the network that ran the baseball games, and all that stuff went away. YouTube TV was the solution. It was $35. It was affordable. It had just what we needed, and it was a cable alternative. And with this price increase, it has now just become another cable, minus the set-top box and all that nonsense. And part of the communication that they put out today was they said they compared it to other, services with the similar kind of pricing. And so that was the graph that I added into the doc there, Burke. And what they did was they compared it to, YouTube TV, which gives you 85 channels, no annual contract, includes NBA and MLB, includes all these other channels, and they're the only one with a cloud DVR storage, and you can have six accounts per household, yada yada, no installation fee, so $65 a month, right? And then they compare it to Hulu plus live TV, which ends up being $64.98, one penny less, right? And the differentiations they're saying is that, yeah, they're similarly priced, but we give you all this extra functionality that you may or may not use, whatever. And then they compare it to traditional services, which include cable boxes and stuff like that, and they price it out as an average monthly cost of $109. And so what they're trying to do is saying, yeah, no, it's cost more, but look at this and look what it's compared. I don't give a crap. I don't watch half the channels on YouTube TV. I don't want Nickelodeon. Mm-hmm. Although I have kids, maybe I do want Nickelodeon. But I don't watch Epics. But I don't watch, I don't watch half the show. There are channels on there that I do not care about. And they're in their marketing, and on the YouTube TV page, it says TV for you. Great. You're Google. It is a customized experience. It is a catered experience. Let me pay $35 a month and pick the 5 channels I want. Right. And Flo, you mentioned tiered services, where that's the same as the channel bundling that Verizon and Cablevision, I'm dating myself there, whatever it's called now, Altice or whatever.
Sling
the nonsense
TV
is.
Does this,
Comcast,
by the way.
And all this sort of stuff, Sling, all this sort of stuff where you get tiers and all this sort of thing. Like, okay, YouTube TV, put your money where your mouth is. Let me say I want ABC, NBC, CBS and, and True TV and SNY. Right. Mm-hmm. And let me pay $20 a month or whatever it might be. Right. They're falling trap into the same problems that is with the larger, telecommunication space. And listen, I get it. I don't want to undervalue the cost of content. Like, that's the last thing. We've cultivated this community where we think content should be free and all this sort of stuff. I understand I'm willing to pay for it, but it's not my fault or not our fault that you're not able to negotiate a more aggressive deal with Viacom, that you have to pay the same license fees the cable companies are doing or whatever, or you're not choosing to suck up those license fees and give us a more attractive product. In the prospect, or come up with a new and innovative way, like Google does through all of their other products and services, to make it more affordable or make it a different service. Because right now, it's just like regular cable, and I got rid of regular cable 10 years ago. Why am I going to keep this then?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Well,
because
regular cable is $120 based on this chart.
Right.
It's $110. So, meanwhile, it's launched $35.
It's a good thing that baseball isn't really real this year, because I can give that up, because it's this fake, not quite baseball.
But to that end, like, I would prefer not to pay for all the sports channels, because I am not that into sports. I'm more into garbage. So give me the garbage that I want to watch and that I want to pay for. There's a lot of other real garbage on there that I don't want to pay for either. It's to the point where this is just bringing up a bigger issue of, we do not have control over this pricing structure. We don't have, I mean, look, I know corporations are in people, but it'd be nice to have some sort of ally in this situation to just say, and to your point, Ron, I was nodding furiously when you were saying, like, YouTube, suck it up. Because the truth of the matter is, y'all got a lot of money over there.
There's no reason why they can't make this, and if their concern is in 3 years, they haven't had the adoption they wanted, haven't been able to, because it goes back to the same problems with the Pixel and things like that, is that whether or not you're marketing it correctly or you're doing it in a confusing way, it's a mostly good product. I do enjoy using it. But that said, I'll be honest with you, the one channel I want, Buzzer, isn't on YouTube TV. I get that on Pluto TV for free. Oof. Right. And like, you know, yeah. And so, you know, like there's so many options now to watch stuff. And I've said this on the show, you know, years and years before, it's death by a thousand cuts with these, you know, death by a thousand microtransactions with these streaming services, you know, and we joked about it, but you know, with Peacock about to launch, with HBO Max just coming out, with Disney Plus out, with Netflix, with Hulu, with all these things, you know, like it used to be that I was paying less than ever for TV and doing it legally and not pirating the way I used to. And now, it's almost it's inched back up to the point where it's possibly paying the same, if not more, than what I was paying when I was had those dumb cable packages. And you know, I'm not going to play that. And like, there's and it's funny because what they did was they infiltrated the cord cutters and brought the cord cutters back to paying what they were paying for having a cord in their house.
Yep.
Yeah. And yeah. It's just not. Yeah.
They chased us. They chased us down the street. They wanted to just let us go. Thing. I should add, by the way, that my total cost for YouTube TV monthly is now $80 because I am also paying for HBO through my YouTube TV subscription.
So that's a pretty penny right there.
It's a lot of freaking money. Yeah. I'm now paying $80. I've never paid this much for TV before in my life.
I mean, back in the glory days of when I was living in New York and on Cablevision at the time, you know, I was paying upwards of like $120, $130 a month for all that because I wanted all the channels and all that nonsense. And when I moved to San Francisco, I said never again. And I first started pirating and then slowly added all these streaming services. And so this is one that's tough to swallow. And the fact that they can't. They have a lot going for them with the DVR, with the multiple accounts and all that fun stuff. It's great. So lean into it more. Give me flexibility in pricing. Give me flexibility in channels. You know, if I don't want Acorn TV, don't make me pay for it. You know, it's great. It's great that you have so many channels that you're offering. But like, honestly, I'm good. Like I will never watch a minute of Cheddar. I will never watch a minute of ESPNU. I don't like college sports. Like I can literally go through this list, you know, and it's like I have no interest in NBC Golf. I have no interest in, you know, in the tennis channel. Like why are you making me pay for these? So I don't know. Sorry.
Why are you making me pay for Fox News, which is garbage? Mm. But anyway. Yeah.
I think my biggest takeaway is that there's a channel called Buzzer that's playing Supermarket Sweep right now.
No, dude, let me tell you, Buzzer, like I cannot recommend if you don't have Pluto TV yet, because I'll tell you how I just
it's on Twitch, by the way. You don't have to go to Pluto TV because Pluto TV you have to wade through some really scary stuff there too.
So. Oh yeah, true. What is it? What else is it on, Flo?
It's on Twitch.
Oh, it's on Twitch. Oh, cool. I didn't even know that. Like streaming, like regular? Oh, cool.
Yeah, so like they have their own Shoutcast has a Twitch streaming profile. Oh, cool. Like Mystery Science Theater has its own Twitch streaming, so sometimes I'll do it that way.
So I discovered Buzzer through the over-the-air antenna in San Francisco. It was one of the random channels that I got over that, and it's the old game show network. Literally just old game shows, and you can catch Match Game, you can catch Card Sharks, you can catch Tattletales. There are all these great 70s and 80s game shows, and they do a lot of the early 50s black and white one, and now they're just starting to do Supermarket Sweep, and they're starting to get into the 80s and 90s, which makes me a little worried because I don't want to see game shows I actually saw as a kid. I want to see ones in the generation before me. So but yeah, Buzzer's fantastic. Just put it on. It's always you can always tune in and it's something worth watching. So
yeah, leave it on in the background.
Young,
that's cool.
Young Betty White being hilarious as ever.
Very right. Funny lady. So okay, sorry, I ranted. We took much far too long on that on YouTube TV, but come on, YouTube. Okay. Come on. Give
it was worth the time. I know there are plenty of people watching and listening that probably feel the very same way about that. So before we get to emails, it's my turn on the app spotlight. So I wanted to showcase an app that came out very recently. It's actually developed by the folks who the alarm clock that I use, which is Sleep as Android. The developer's name is Urban Droid. And they created a new app called Don't Kill My App. All one word, Don't Kill My App. Now, this is early access, so they're still kind of building it out and everything. It's nothing to do with an alarm clock app. In fact, if you're not a developer, you might get minimal usage out of an app like this. But they created this because, you know, their app Sleep is Android. Obviously, it's an alarm clock app. It works on all sorts of devices, but they would constantly run into issues with, behind the scenes sleep processes happening on the device that might kill the alarm, as one example. Essentially, developers, are always kind of fighting these as different manufacturers build out their devices to do things, in the background to improve performance, maybe kill apps that are running for a long time, that sort of stuff. And developers, sometimes it can be a real kind of headache because it interferes with how their app operates, and maybe it shouldn't be. So UrbanDroid created this app for developers to really understand the performance of their apps and how they interfere and interact with background app management on devices at the device level. Sleep is Android, like I said, they've just seen their fair share of issues, so I'm sure they're using this, but it's useful for everyone. You just basically, you select anywhere between 1 to 8 hours, and it's a benchmarking app, so it runs a benchmarking test, kind of analyzes your phone to see what's going on in the background, and then it reports any issues that come up along the way. Like I said, for everyday users, it's probably not that useful. But if you are a developer and you're listening to this show, it's probably an app that you want to get and add to your arsenal because it can help you identify kind of different ways, different pitfalls that your app might fall into as far as interfering with those background app processes. The data is a little bit complicated. The developers apparently plan to devise a score to quickly understand kind of give you a score that you can glance at and go, okay, things are looking really good right here versus not. So again, the app is called Don't Kill My App. And if you're a developer, you'll probably find some use for that. So check it out and see what you think. And I love those developers. They do a great job with Sleep is Android. So this app is no different.
Cool.
All
good
right.
Pick. I like it.
I thought it was kind of neat. We've got some emails starting with Ron. What you got?
All right. I love the emails. It's so great. And I realized last week me and Flo totally forgot to add them to the show, but we ran long anyway with Dave. So anyway, so I'm glad we got a bunch this week to do it. So Kevin writes in and he responded to my call, which I love when you guys do this. Kevin says, writing in response to Ron's call for ROG phone users or ROG phone users. I've used Google Phone starting with the Nexus 4 and replacing my Pixel 3 XL with the ROG Phone 2. I'm not a big mobile gamer, but it turns out that many features good for gaming happen also be good for watching. As large of a screen as possible with a bezel, dual front-facing speakers, large long-lasting battery, and multiple audio-video out options. Pictures are not a major concern for me. Most phones are good enough for my needs. For a lower price than many other comparable flagships, it was one of the best choices for my use case. Which is a fair thing. If you look at those ROG phones, they actually are pretty good media devices, I suppose. So it's interesting. I still do want to hear from a gamer though, who is actively playing games on a ROG phone. So the call still stands. I still want to hear from you. So email us at aa@twit.tv if you are a member of the Republic of Gamers.
Dun dun dun.
Dun dun.
Excellent. Thank you for sending in that email, Kevin. Appreciate it. Flo, you got the next one.
So this one comes from a larger, longer email written by Danilo. Danilo had written us a long email venting frustration around the Google Play Music / YouTube Music kerfuffle. And there's a couple of key takeaways from this letter just in terms of things that you should maybe keep in mind if you're planning on doing the same switchover. So Danilo wrote in that they realized they were paying for both Google Play Music and YouTube Premium at the same time. They realized that having YouTube Premium didn't end the subscription to Google Play Music, even though YouTube Premium includes Google Play Music. They couldn't cancel Google Play Music online or in the app, adding to the frustration of the situation. So then they contacted support, who said that they could cancel it. Okay. So in doing so, they would have lost their full library, their playlists, everything that they had accumulated over the years in Google Play Music.
Yeah,
so
that happened to him. So he's like, go for it, do it, and boom, all that stuff disappeared.
Okay, yeah. So all that happened. Then Google said that they would get someone on it to kind of help fix the situation. So Danilo then wrote in, it's been 4 days since I got any response from them from Google, and it's starting to dawn on me that I probably lost all my library, my playlists, and my uploaded songs, and I'm stuck with YouTube Music since they don't allow new Google Play Music subscriptions anymore. It's a sad, sad feeling. So for people out there, a word of advice, do not make the same mistake. Pay for both services if you have to, at least while you can.
I'm not so crazy. This is my exact problem.
Yeah. I was going to say, I have not been very impressed with what I've been hearing about this whole transition. It just sounds like it's had a lot of hiccups and mix-ups. And quite frankly, and I don't mean this as a brag. I feel like I made the right decision switching to Spotify a long time ago when I did, because I'm not currently dealing with the situation.
Don't get Spotify superiority complex.
You're right. And you know what? You're
that's
right.
Not that fair. That's not fair.
And I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
That's not fair.
I apologize.
There was no way that you moved to Spotify because you thought that at some point Google was going to muck this all up.
No, that's I will say that a long time ago.
It's relieving. It's relieving.
Yeah. I was sad.
I'm glad that I, while embracing Google Play Music, kept my local library, of books, but of music, so that I can just slide over to PlexAmp and use that and have my own kind of stuff. And that works for me.
Yeah.
You know, and sure, instead of paying $15 a month or $10 a month or whatever for a streaming service, I'm going to pay, you know, $20 for a new album every once in a while, but I'd rather support the artist directly. So, you know, it's definitely challenging, but this is a great example, and I'm sorry that this happened. You know, really sucks, because, you know, in my case, it's like a house of cards and it's working. And so I don't want to touch anything for fear it's going to break like this. It's difficult. And I can't think of a streaming service that I would recommend alternatively in replace of Google Play Music or YouTube Music, because I don't like Spotify. Like I think the interface and their approach to it and everything is not how I want to consume music. So it's a challenge. That's for sure.
Cousin of Ja in chat room points out something that you hear a lot of times when you're talking about moving your media to the cloud and everything, which is never trust the cloud that you don't own, which is important to remember and makes me nervous because, like, I really do rely on the cloud with my photos, Google Photos. Now, we've talked on the show in the past how, Google wouldn't possibly change things with Google Photos. And as much as I believe that mostly, there is a future where Google decides photos doesn't work anymore and you run into an issue. The point being, if you don't own the server in the cloud that you're relying on storing all of this data in, then you're not really, it's not a backup. Do not consider it a backup because it could conceivably go away at any moment and suddenly you don't have that media anymore. It's gone. And if that's your only place it's at, you're screwed.
It's time for a movement to get out of the cloud and get back on the ground.
Yeah, or just be in both places. Make sure that you're up in the sky as well as on the ground.
Come back to the ground. Put your feet on the ground and look up to the clouds.
Yes. That's right. All right, final email, and we thought we'd kind of change things up. We want to put a cap on this show. So each week, we're going to start with a drum roll right now, Burke. Right. Yes.
That's very long.
Email of the week. Yeah, okay, we'll work on the
email
drum
of the
roll.
Week.
That wasn't an aggressive enough drum roll. That's okay with what we got this week. But every week we're going to pick an email and just call it as the email of the week. And guess what, Tom B. from San Antonio? You are the lucky person to have the email of the week this week. Tom B. says, forgive me if this is a question you've already addressed, but I'm trying to figure out the following issue. When I receive calls from numbers I don't know, which seems to have only increased under the current COVID situation, there is no easy or instant way to copy the number for the incoming or missed phone number so that I can easily search it in Google. I have to remember the number and go into Google search, which is very annoying. Are you guys aware of an easy solution? A small thing, but very irritating. Longtime listener, first time emailer, P.S. Ron, I must admit, I miss you on iFanboy, but glad you're still on All About Android.
Oh, thanks, Tom. I miss you too.
Did you find something, Jason? Because I am now using the OnePlus dialer, and that allows you to copy the number. But I had the exact same issue, which is why I was also nodding over here. It was very annoying when I would get spam numbers, and I want to see who it is, what it is, you know, and I couldn't. Well, not from the Pixel dialer.
Yeah, I think it really probably depends on which dialer you're using. Different dialers might support it versus others. But I came up with a way that's kind of a nerdy approach, but it's actually really quick. And I've included a video that kind of demonstrates it, so I can talk through it as we show it. But and I'm using in the video, I'm using my recent calls list because I couldn't time it with an incoming call. But assume that you're getting an incoming call and the phone number is displayed on the screen. When that comes in, go ahead and hit play on that, and I can walk through it, Burke, if it's there and if it's all loaded. If not, I can just explain it. Okay, so see the phone number down at the bottom? So what I did is I took a screenshot of that and then tapped to edit to bring it up into the editor, and then swiped up to make it a multitasking window. And then if you know, in the multitasking view, you can tap and hold any text that appears there, and it gives you the copy, the cut, and the search functionality around it. So essentially what I'm doing is I'm taking a screenshot of the call that's coming through. I'm swiping that screenshot up into the multitasking view, so it gives me that snapshot. And then I'm tap and holding on the number, and boom, it gives me the ability to search it with one tap. It's a three-step process. It would be way easier if it was integrated into the app itself. But this is one way to do it without having to remember. And yes, it's kind of nerdy. It's kind of hacky. But it does what you asked, so maybe that's good. I don't know. I thought it was kind of nerdy.
Some folks in the chat are saying that you can just go to you can go to the history, and then when you go into history, there is the three dots, which is the more button, and then you would tap on the three dots, and then it lets you copy the number.
Three dots, call history. Yeah, okay, let's see here. Can I? Call details. Oh, copy number. Okay. Well, I'd show it on here, but yeah, okay, so with the Pixel with the Google dialer, if you're in that actually works. Recents, tap on the number, go into the history, and then you can go in there and do copy from there. Copy the number is in the three dot menu. So that's maybe an easier way to do.
Quick solution just to offer. There are apps that you can download that will actually cross-reference the number with a database so that when it's calling you, you know if it's spam or not, versus having to rely on the Google algorithm and like teaching it. And I used to use those in the past when I would get a lot of calls, but I'm at the point now where if I don't recognize the number, I just let it ring unless I get a voicemail. But if you want to know as the number is calling you, I look at apps like I believe Should I Answer. It looks like it's an app. I brought it to the arena many, many, many moons ago. It looks like that's still around, and a couple others like Call Blocker.
True Caller,
correct. Yeah, just look at the reviews, see, you know, what people have said, and maybe it's time to bring in a third party to kind of help you deal with this, because I know how annoying it can be.
Yeah, it can be annoying, and that is why Tom B., you are the emailer of the week. They're all awesome emails, by the way.
We need, you know what sound we need for this? We need somebody blowing on like a party horn, like a birthday party horn. Yeah, something exactly.
Like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well done. Or a gong. We'll work on it. We'll come up with something. We figured we should end the show with something. Our punctuation used to be the arena. The problem was the punctuation was 20 minutes long. So at least this way.
The arena was an M dash. It was just like a quick break that you would take, and then it would just be a whole nother soliloquy at the end.
Yes, exactly. So anyway, send your email, AAA@twit.tv, 347-SHOW, AAA, if you want your voice to be heard on the show. We'll play your voicemail as well. But that is it for this week. We've reached the end of this episode of All About Android. Next week, we are welcoming back David Immel from Android Authority. Looking forward to that. Flo, what you working on? What's new in the Flo feed?
Oh, I've just been working on a lot of guides and things over here. I'm doing some long form work that you probably won't see until the end of the summer, but lots of testing in my lab, which is just basically the house. But for keeping in touch with me and what I'm up to, FlorenceIon.com is the best place to go. If you want some quick links to where I am on the web or just you want a quick link, go to flowrights.tech. And I've got a clip there from Material Podcast, kind of clip of the week sort of situation I post in there. I've got links to what I've been working on. I got links to all the social media, everything you need to see there. If you just don't want to deal with my blog on the Flow feed, but please do visit Flow feed because I put a lot of work into it and I appreciate the support.
Nice. Love it. Thank you, Flow. And what about you, Ron?
I love the Flow feed. The Flow feed fixes all my tech issues.
True. That's why I attempt
yeah.
anyway.
Yeah. So I love you all. I love doing the show. Thank you for watching. Hey, Tom B from San Antonio, who was the emailer of the week. You missed me on iFanboy, but if you subscribe to iFanboy, if you go over to iFanboy.com, you could hear once a month I return for the iFanboy Media Explode. Most recently, last week, we put out the latest episode where we talk about one of my favorite movies of all time, That Thing You Do. Written and directed by Tom Hanks and yes. Supporting acting of Tom Hanks. And we talk a lot of, oh my God, Jason, you would love this movie. Like okay.
Jason,
more so,
you've
more
never
so,
seen That Thing You Do, Jason.
I've never Jason, seen you, it.
It's right up your alley. You really need to watch it. It's really good.
You have to watch it this weekend. Please, okay. Just please do. It's a joy.
It's really, it's really good.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll put it on my list.
So, so That Thing You Do. And so put it on your list, then go to iFanboy, listen to me and Josh and Connor talk about it because it's a fun time. So there you go. I love talking about movies whenever we can. And follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at RonXO.
A big thanks to Burke and Victor, both of whom are working behind the scenes to bring you this show each and every week. We appreciate you guys. We love you. Thank you for your work and your hard effort on it. You can find me doing shows all over the Twit Network, including my other Android show, Hands on Android, twit.tv/HOA. Last week's episode, While I Was Gone, is an episode on forcing Stadia to work on Android TV. Stadia is not cleared for Android TV yet. Google does not make it easy for you to do it. But once you jump through some hoops, it's fully functional and you can turn your Android TV device into a console to play Stadia games. So I show you how to do that. Coming up this Thursday, I take a look at adoptable storage. I actually answer some email from someone who has a question on freeing up file space. What is adoptable storage and some ways that you can find extra file storage space on your device if you're running low. So twit.tv/HOA to do that. But otherwise, that's it for this week. We publish this show all about Android every Tuesday evening. Victor works late into the evening to publish it. Hopefully it gets out before midnight Pacific time. Subscribe by going to twit.tv/AAA. There you can find links to the audio, the video, podcatchers, YouTube even. Everything that you need is all there ready and waiting for you. So go subscribe and then you don't have to do the hard work of finding the episode after the fact. But that's it for this week. We'll see y'all next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.
Yay.
Have a safe holiday.
Hey, folks, it's Micah Sargent here, co-host of Smart Tech Today right here on twit.tv. Every single week, Matthew Casanelli and I sit down to talk about smart tech for the week. That's right. It can get kind of complicated, but there's a lot of news out there. There's a lot of products to dig through. There are a lot of questions to answer, and we try to do that all every single week. From voice assistants to wearables to smart garage door openers and lights, there's so much to cover and, well, so little time. So be sure to check it out. It's twit.tv/STT. Huh, that rhymes.